Okay, this is the kernel room. I keep repeating this. And our next talk's by Tycho about Linux receive FD replace semantics.
Oh, cool.
Hi, my name's Tycho, and I'm going to complain to you about a kind of an esoteric corner of the kernel API. We had some patches on the mailing list about 6 months ago for this. They were done by my colleague Alok, who unfortunately could not be here. So he is, I think, in the chat room. If questions come up, I will try and read them or read his answer. So the actual hard stuff was done by him. I'm just kind of here to complain. So what do we actually want to do? We want to intercept connect with seccomp. And then do some stuff with the file descriptor. So we want to put a file descriptor into a task's file descriptor table. And that eventually calls this function that I'm here to complain about. So this, if you've not seen the seccomp API before, basically what you can do with this API is capture a system call from a task and then forward it to some other user space daemon to do arbitrary things and then return a result. If you look at a typical application, they want to do some stuff. They want to listen on the network, or they want to connect to some networks or something. So they create an EPOL socket, and then they put the socket in the EPOL thing, and then they connect on the socket, and then they use EPOL to wait to say, like, is this socket connected or not? So this is like the JVM does this when you make a network connection or something. This is like an extremely common use case. So let's just look at what actually happens in the kernel when you do this. So when you make a EPOL call to add a particular socket to the EPOL instance, it creates a big table, it creates a big tree. And the tree is a tree of tuples. The first element in the tuple is the file descriptor number. And the second element of the tuple is the struct file pointer. And I'm using 0x5 here to denote it's an arbitrary pointer, but it's the file descriptor pointer that maps to file descriptor 5. So that's what my notation here means. So that it takes a copy of the file descriptor and the file, puts it in this tree, and then you go on your merry way. And then you add a second one, and it does exactly the same thing, except for this one's 0x6. And then if you did it again, you would get another element in your tree, and this is some RB tree or something. And so it's sorted in some way, but how it's sorted is not really important for this talk. So that's what EPOL does. When a socket receives data, then this is in user space. You are waiting for stuff. Data is received on file descriptor 5. You read file descriptor 5, it tells you, hey, there was data on 5. You read 5, and then you have your data, and you're happy. So this is like the happy path, what people expect how applications normally work. But remember, I said at the beginning that we are interested in using seccomp to munge with the file descriptor table. So the reason you might be interested in doing this is for all manner of things. We do it for IPv4 to IPv6 migration. You can do it transparently to the application this way, so the application doesn't need to know. And also, it's not in the data plane. So the socket is connected from the right place, and so there's no IP table stuff that's making decisions based on every packet or whatever. So that's some motivation. There's a lot of other things you can do with this API, but that's what I'm doing with this right now. So we're in this normal world, everything's happy. Now we want to mix in this seccomp add FD. So specifically, we're going to look at what happens when I do the connect call. So what happens is I connect. This side is going to be the user space side, and the other side is going to be the other user space side. This is the daemon that it's waiting for notify events, so it's waiting to say, hey, have I gotten a connect call yet? So this is how it waits. Then it creates a new socket, using some magic, whatever it decides. Like, however it decides is appropriate. Does a addFD call. That eventually calls this receiveFD replace thing. You can see here my new socket is really 0x8, so it's not 0x5. So there's physically different underlying files, but I'm replacing it at FD5. That ultimately does the actual replace. And then it returns back to the user, and if they did a read on file descriptor 5, now, because of the result of this call, they would get the contents of file descriptor 8. But there's some things that don't happen. And maybe it's easier if we skip one ahead here. You remember our tree, and here we had file descriptor 5 paired with 5. What doesn't happen is that 5 does not get replaced. In particular, this does not happen. So this 5-8 change, that does not happen. And so as a result, you're in a very weird state where if you read 5, you read struct 5, but because the epoch structure was not changed, it will report data on struct of this old file that was the one you replaced. And so now you're reporting epoch events on the wrong file descriptor, like things are all confused. In some cases, you will close the file descriptor from epoch because it keeps a weak reference, and then you will report no events at all. So that is also bad. So what ideally would happen is exactly this, that we would fix this up so that epoll works nicely when you use this API. So questions are how to fix this. So we have, and I'm not really going to go through this algorithm, but this is how we did it. I wrote a bunch of C to do it kind of the CREU way, where you read and iterate over a bunch of stuff. And it works, and it's what we use today, so you know it's a good first crack. But you have to parse the FD info for every possible FD, and like if you have lots of FDs, then you know individual system calls take a long time. That makes people sad, and so we want to do something better. So one option would be with extra FD info. So the insight here is that the kernel actually knows if this particular file is attached to a epoll instance, so it could tell you. Then you wouldn't have to iterate through all the files, but you'd still have to go and manually fix up and do this replace. You know, you have to do all the string slinging and stuff that the FD info requires. So this was where the kernel patches came in. So there was a patch series here by Alok. So Christian complained that this is a layer violation because the FD table is touching files inside of it, which is kind of backwards. And seccomp is the only user of this currently in the tree. So he suggests to do something else, which is this. So basically have seccomp specific flags for this fix-up behavior. But I'm here to complain to you. This is sort of the end of my talk and maybe the beginning of the arguments. Because I don't think this is really that great, because everybody who does receive replaced FD in the future has to like then add their own flags. And like it's, I think, pretty clear, at least to me, that the semantic that currently exists, absolutely nobody wants. Like it's just we didn't think about it when we wrote all this. So I'm wondering if we add some arguments to receive replace FD, if that's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the only the initial implementation was kind of a bit weird. I think it's not a problem if we extend epoll to do the replace. So if you just have an epoll helper and you call it from your FD replace function to update epoll, that's sort of fine.
Okay.
And I think that's the last version. I looked at it before exactly so that I could say something smart or look smart. But what your last version kind of did, I think the only thing is the locking change for epoll.
Yeah.
Quite drastically, which yeah. makes it a bit more tricky. But I think other than that, like it's sort of I think it's probably doable. It's probably doable. The things that I'm not currently clear about, and I'm not an EPOL expert, so is EPOL has pretty advanced and complicated logic to check, for example, whether adding a specific file adds loops. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that we need to do is we need to prevent replacing EPOLFDs themselves, because then you have this sort of looping. Basically, you can have an EPOLFD that you add to an EPOL instance, and then you get notifications from another EPOL instance, and sort of you need to take care that you don't get cycles and don't get deadlocks. So I think we need to stop that from happening. And there is some weird logic that I haven't yet figured out where it sort of checks to limit the number of wakeups that you can get, and it sort of does that every time you add a file, and I'm not sure if that's specific to the file type that's added or if this is just a generic sort of check. If it's just a generic sort of check, it doesn't matter, then updating the file pointer probably doesn't matter. And the third thing is this race-free in the sense that if you walk through the EPOL instance and you update all of the file pointers, can we lock out everyone else using that EPOL instance to not inject behind our back the old file again and stuff like that? I think it can't happen, but...
I haven't looked at the new locking. In the old locking, I think the answer to that was no. But in the new locking, I don't know. I could imagine that the answer might be yes.
I just wanted to I may not understand the full edge cases because I only roughly played with this API, but I have hard time understanding why it's a problem in the first place, specifically for your use case like IPv4 to IPv6. Why do you want to replace the socket after it was created? Why not seccomp intercept the socket call when it creates it? You immediately duplicate the socket in your supervisor process, and then intercept connect, of course, and then just replace the arguments from IPv4 to IPv6. But you already have the proper socket in the program and probably duplicate in your supervisor, and kind of that problem just doesn't exist.
Yeah, the problem is you can actually change address families on the fly. So when you create a socket, you have to declare an address family. But if you use send message and their connect API, you can change the address family of the socket on the fly, or you can declare it unspecified initially and decide later. So when the socket is created, we don't actually know, is this a socket we care about? So we can only reason about that when we actually connect.
Yeah, but it doesn't. What I mean is if we care, what we care about is that the file descriptors and files respectively are in some EPOL instance. So what we need in the supervisor process is a duplicate of that file descriptor. And then when we later intercept other system calls, we kind of can match them and replace the arguments. But what I mean is we don't have to go and retroactively modify the EPOL.
I see.
We just track the socket through its lifetime of the supervisor process.
So when a socket's created, you would dupe it and then just keep a copy of all open sockets.
Yeah,
you can do that. We're ideally trying to do less work, trying to intercept less things, not more. But this could be another way to fix it.
What I mean is a more complex supervisor user space process sounds more preferable than more complexity inside the kernel.
Yeah.
The wider one of the concerns I think that I uttered was, you do it for EPOL now. What other parts of the kernel do we need to play the same game then eventually?
Yeah, for example, we do not currently deploy this for applications that use select because it has exactly the same problem.
Yeah, select and general poll. And I think for select it would be even more difficult to do this right, I guess. But you could probably say, fuck it, we don't care about select. Block select, only allow EPOL or whatever. But
yeah, we've managed to get pretty far with just the EPOL fixes. So at some point applications will start using IOU ring, but I hope at that point they'll also use IPv6, and then the set of applications using IOU ring and IPv4.
But then you're fucked in other ways. So because with IOU ring, I guess you can have these fixed file descriptors, which is a whole another can of worms that is kind of interesting. I wonder if this makes it more difficult. And I think IOU ring also has its own polling mechanism and so on. Yeah.
But again, like hopefully, at least for our use case, the set of applications that we want to do this on and that use IOU ring are disjoint. So other questions? Oh, 5 minutes left. Why? It was easy. He said, okay. So maybe the talk's over. Cool. I had some other slides, but whatever. Thank you.